Our study tonight is beginning the book of Micah in the Old Testament. Micah chapter 1, verses 1 to 16, God's punishment of the common people for idolatry. Micah, who was a Judean from Moresheth in the southwestern part of Palestine, preached to the common people of Judah. This was at the same time when Isaiah was working in the court in Jerusalem. In Micah 1:1-16, God's prophet revealed God's coming judgment on the common people for their idolatry, be they of the northern kingdom of Israel or from the southern kingdom of Judah. So we view the passage for our insight and application. This is one of those passages where the Hebrew greatly enriches the text. When you read it in English, it looks like just, you know, rather blah, but it's full of spice. When you get into the Hebrew text, we'll look at it. Let me read it first and we'll look at it. Micah chapter 1, beginning to verse 1. The word of the Lord that came to Micah, which means who is the Lord, who is like the Lord, the Morashathite in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, Hezekiah, kings of Judah, which he saw concerning Samaria, that's the northern kingdom, and Jerusalem, the southern kingdom. Hear, all ye people, hearken, O earth, and all that therein is, and let the Lord be witness against you, the Lord from his holy temple. For behold, the Lord comes forth out of his place, and will come down and tread upon the high places of the earth. The mountains shall be molten under him, and the valleys shall be cleft as wax before the fire, and as the waters that are poured out down a steep place. For the transgression of Jacob is all this, and for the sins of the house of Israel. What is the transgression of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? What are the high places of Judah? Are they not Jerusalem? Therefore I will make Samaria as an heap of the field, and as plantings of a vineyard, and I will pour down the stones thereof into the valley below, and I will discover or lay bare the foundations thereof. And all the graven images thereof shall be beaten to pieces, and all the hires thereof shall be burned with the fire, and all the idols thereof I will lay desolate. For she gathered it of the hire of a harlot, and they shall return to the hire of a harlot. Therefore I will wail and howl. I will go stripped and naked. I will make a wailing like the dragons and mourning as the owls. For her wound is incurable. For it has come unto Judah. He has come unto the gate of my people, even to Jerusalem. Declare ye not it in Gath, weep ye not at all. In the house of Ephrah, roll thyself in the dust. Pass you away, thou inhabitants of Saphir, having thy shame naked. The inhabitant of Za'anan came not forth in the morning of Beth Edzel. He shall receive it of you as standing. For the inhabitant of Maroth waited carefully for good, but evil came down from the Lord unto the gate of Jerusalem. O thou inhabitant of Lachish, bind the chariot to the swift beast. She is the beginning of the sin to the daughter of Zion, for the transgressions of Israel were found in thee. Therefore shalt thou give presents to Moreshethgath. The houses of Achzib shall lie to the kings of Israel, shall be a lie to the kings of Israel. Yet I will bring an heir unto thee, O inhabitant of Marashah. He shall come unto Adullam, the glory of Israel. Make thee bald and poll thee for thy delicate children. Enlarge thy baldness as the eagle, for they are gone into captivity from thee. Okay, we need to decode a lot of this. First of all, God was going to send the Assyrians to punish all of God's people in the land for their idolatry. That's what Micah 1:1-16 is all about. Micah spoke to all the people of Samaria, and Samaria, remember, is the capital city of the northern kingdom of Israel, and of Jerusalem, which signifies the southern kingdom, because Jerusalem was the capital of the southern kingdom of Judah, and that to bring God's indictment against them from his temple. So even though Micah was from the southwestern part of Judah, he was preaching to all the common people, both in the southern and in the northern kingdoms, where Isaiah was preaching and teaching, prophesying to the elite class. Isaiah's Hebrew is much higher. His poetry is much more polished than Micah, even though Micah is everything as poet. Micah utilized the language of the common people. It was very direct, bold, brash. Isaiah was a polished author. Well, in highly figurative language, Micah predicted that God would arrive to punish the people in his fury. like the mountains melting under him because of the great heat of his fury. He would express his wrath over his people's sins. The northern kingdom is represented in its capital city of Samaria, and Jerusalem represented in the southern kingdom of Judah. Micah addressed the sins of the people throughout both nations. Now God would use the Assyrian invaders to make Syria like a heap in a field, a place for vineyards, and he would pour down the stones of the city into the valley below it, laying its foundations bare. In 1963, our last time coming home from Africa, we were privileged to tour Israel. We got up to Samaria, and we got to see the area, and it's true, the valley is just full of this, all the old stones from the city. They pushed off, and they went rolling down this fairly steep hill. And all that's left is a little bit of the remnants of the Baal altar that was in that area, a big stone thing. But other than that, it's just sort of a rocky area. But it had been the capital city of the area. Since Israel had practiced pagan temple prostitution for wages, God would let the invading Assyrians smash these temple monies and then use them again in their own idolatrous prostitution. I guess the monies would be smashed and then they would be reminted. And they would be remitted and they would use them for their own idolatrous prostitution. Now in Micah chapter 1 verses 8 and 9, God's prophet said he would lament over Samaria's fall, for her wound was incurable, meaning her punishment was inevitable. And since the northern kingdom's sins had so influenced the southern kingdom, the Assyrians, as tools of God's judgment, would reach even to the gate of Jerusalem, according to Micah 1:9. Now, this prediction was fulfilled when the Assyrians surrounded Jerusalem but didn't conquer it. Remember in the days of Hezekiah, King Sennacherib came down and his soldiers surrounded the city of Jerusalem. But it's interesting, Hezekiah prayed unto the Lord, and so the Lord delivered the city of Jerusalem. But the rest of Judea was pretty much conquered by the Assyrians at that particular time. That's when the angel of the Lord came at the request of Hezekiah to deliver them. The angel of the Lord slew in one night 185,000 Assyrian soldiers. We know that event happened not only from Scripture, but from a secular account. There's a Greek historian by the name of Herodotus who admitted that there were 185,000 soldiers that died overnight, but he said that they died of bubonic plague. Now, that could have happened, because bubonic plague could spread very, very quickly and do a number. But the King Sennacherib returned to his own city, and of course, there his own sons in his own temple, where his own God couldn't protect him, slew him. And then Esarhaddon, I think the first or second, came to the throne at that particular point. But this is interesting. The prophet here, Micah, says that the king would even reach to the gate of Jerusalem. But he's likening the Lord doing this, because the Lord is actually using Sennacherib to punish because people had turned away from the Lord. Now, in Micah chapter 1, verses 10 to 16, Micah traced the route of the invading army from the Philistine coastal plain through the Judean hills to Jerusalem. And when he did that, he started using proverbial expressions to mock the cities that this Sennacherib was going to defeat, because these cities had been guilty of sin. And there's a tremendous play on words that goes throughout this whole section, verses 10 through 16, that I'll touch upon here. Micah's call for the invasion not to be declared in the Philistine city of Gath is a proverbial expression for disaster. When you say declare it not here, declare it not there, whenever that's used, David sometimes uses this in his laments, it's an implication that it's a disaster, because if it's declared in these other cities, the other cities will rejoice. So you don't want the other cities, the enemies of Israel, to rejoice. However, the people of Beth Ophrah, meaning house of dust, were to roll in the dust in grief, Micah 1:10. Rolling in the dust is one of the signals of grieving. So these are the people, the house of dust would be rolling in the dust. Then the women would be taken first as captives, for the word for inhabitants in Micah chapter 1, verses 11 and 12, all these towns, is feminine. It's not masculine. And this is often the women were seen as prizes in war. So they would take them captive first, and they'd be taken off, and they'd be married off to other men and so forth. It was very traumatic. In the ancient Near East war, it was extremely traumatic on women. Saphir sounds like the Hebrew word for beauty and is contrasted with their shame. Za'anan sounds like a verb meaning to go out, and it's contrasted with the fear of the people to go outside of their houses. Beth Edzel sounds like the word meaning foundation, and they had none. Marot is like a word meaning to wait for good, whereas they were actually waiting for evil. Micah then urged the people of Lachish, which sounds like the word for a team, Rekish, of horses, to get a chariot ready for escaping from the Assyrians. Of course, that would be in vain. Lachish evidently influenced Jerusalem for idolatry because it would suffer greatly. It's interesting, when the Babylonians eventually came, this is after the Assyrians, Lachish sent letters to the city of Jerusalem. They found some of these letters put in Hebrew, the old Hebrew script, and these letters were made on and baked on clay, and they were pleading for help, and they didn't get it, of course. Now, as a father would give parting gifts to his daughter when she marries, Jerusalem would give the town of Moresheth Gath into Assyria's king, who would capture her citizens, Micah 1:14, and the town of Akzib, which means deception, would become deceptive, which is Akzab, unable to help Israel's kings. A conqueror, Assyria's king Sennacherib, would attack Mareshah, which means possessor, the town becoming possessed by the invading conqueror. Even the small children of the inhabitants of these Judean towns would be taken captive by the invading Assyrians, leading to great mourning and expressions of mourning. So they would go through and they pick up these little children, a lot of them toddlers, small preschoolers, and they would just take them away from their parents, take away from their mothers. You can imagine the trauma that this would produce. And so there was going to be tremendous mourning, signs of mourning, and dressing in mourning. Now, what is significant, and I've already touched upon this earlier, is that though much of Judah was conquered by Assyria at this time, Jerusalem under King Hezekiah was spared because Hezekiah relied on the Lord and not false gods for deliverance. That's recorded in Isaiah chapter 36, 1 to 37, verse 38, and God delivered them. The tragedy is the common people weren't looking to the Lord. They should have followed Hezekiah. Hezekiah was. He was a godly man, and he tried to set up the reforms, but the people didn't buy into it, not completely. And they still hung on to their idolatry. So, of course, with the judgment of God, he's not going to let anybody, anybody who's into idolatry, he's not going to let anybody go. So if the king's fine with the Lord, God saves the king. But if the people aren't, he'll get the people. And that's exactly what happened. So God punished the common people of Israel and Judah for their own sins, independent of their leaders. The application is, since God holds each of us accountable to him, may we each sense our accountability to the Lord. As I was repeating this, preparing to come, I thought of an illustration that happened many years ago. My dad was driving in a car. He was driving out to the ranch where we were at, and he was following one of the guys, somebody who was in front of him. And the guy was in front of him was over the speed limit, 5-10 miles an hour. I forget what it was. It was kind of a flat road there, so everybody's going faster. Lo and behold, a police officer pulled up behind my dad with flashed his lights, and so he pulled him over. And the officer said, "I stopped you for speeding, so I'm going to write you a ticket." My dad said, "Well, the guy in front of me was, he was actually going faster than me. I could hardly keep up with him." And I'll never forget, and Dad said, "The officer says, yeah, but I caught you, and I'm going to give you a ticket." And he did. He wrote it out. From then on, you can never get Dad to go a mile over the speed limit on that road. I mean, even if we were late and it was a long time going home, he says, "Nope, you know, never know where these cops are, and I do not want to pay the state of California one more penny because I'm over speeding." He learned from that. And of course, Marge knows my dad, remembers him from Reinhardt Bible Church days. But that was a lesson that Dad learned. You know, no matter what your neighbors are doing, no matter what anybody else on the road is doing, you better obey the law. Because if you don't, you could get caught. And guess what? You pay. So you learn to fear God and the state patrol in California. I don't know if we have that much fear today in Connecticut. There are a lot of people that are speeding on Interstate 84, weaving. I've seen them even weaving on the road here going to Torrington on Route 202. They just go past. You wonder what's going on. But it's really important for us. We can't escape the Lord and our accountability to the Lord. So God holds everybody. He holds not only the leaders of our church accountable. He holds the people in the pew accountable, just like the leaders, to obey the Lord. So may we obey the Lord.